And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday. As we inch a little bit closer to the holidays. Coming up, some takeaways from last night's Monday Night Football doubleheader. And we still have two more games to go tonight. Plus, what will be the best job in the NFL this offseason for a head coach? How appealing is Trevor Lawrence still? Also, the Gamecocks making some big moves over the past week. Why that is crucial. The division to watch for the foreseeable future in college football. New man in charge trying to take down the Atlanta Braves. We'll get to that later on. Plus, as always, our Tuesday Top 10. I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong. We'll continue to get ready for Christmas and a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays. On Facebook, at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You'll find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, got plenty to do. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, just trying to stay dry and stay warm. About you?
Yeah, not too bad. Man, if it was a little bit colder, we could have a white Christmas this year. 45 degrees and rainy out there, another nasty day. Yeah, it's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas. Let me start with this. Last night, the doubleheader. Now, were they the two most exciting games? No, they were not. They were close. They were fairly competitive. Wasn't the best watched football or the most offensive games, but they were outdoors in Colder City. That's really December football. And the Raiders found a way to win an important game on the road. The Vikings found a way to win on the road, stay alive in the playoff race. I would rather have bad football than no football. Right, if you thought those were ugly games last night, you're thinking like, wow, this is terrible. I think that's better than having to watch The Bachelor on a Monday night or whatever else is on. Bob Loves Abishola, whatever else you got on TV. I'd rather watch the bad football games than have no football. I'm looking forward to the two games tonight. I've gotten used to this. I wish we had NFL football every day. And right now we're going through a stretch here where it's pretty close. In fact, this should almost become, we always use this term now, the new normal. This should become the new normal. That once you get to the holidays, you're taking time off from work, and everything is so relaxed. It's different this time of year, these 2 weeks. Why not alter the NFL schedule a little bit as well? Why not get some of these games around the holidays? The family's home. You got family coming in. You're taking time off of work. You're around the house more. You're getting ready for Christmas. You're wrapping gifts, whatever it is. You're not out so much. Why not have some games on a Tuesday every year around Christmas, depending on when the holiday falls? But these 2 weeks, up until Christmas, New Year's, as long as you don't interfere with the college football playoff, the bowl games are becoming less meaningful year after year after year, so you don't have to worry about that. What would you rather watch, Old Dominion and Tulsa yesterday, or a couple of NFL games with playoff implications on the line at night? Why not adjust the schedule a little bit? And you can find a way to make it work so that teams aren't always playing on short weeks for these important games this time of year. Maybe you throw in a second bye, I don't know. But I like it. We get two more games tonight. I would love that if this was the norm every year, that around the holidays you got games Monday, which is normal. Saturday you start to play. But then even let's throw a Tuesday game in there. Why not a Friday game? Let's have a long weekend of NFL. And tonight you get two more important games. If the Washington football team wins their game tonight against Philadelphia, they overtake that last wild card spot for the time being. If Philadelphia wins, they keep pace. And the Rams, if they win, they'll be tied with the Cardinals for the division as they go up against the Seahawks, who are trying to save their season. So a couple of important games tonight. You'll be missing a lot of players in these games. That's why they're playing now, because of the whole COVID issue. That's why they had to be moved. We'll see what we have. But this time of year, it's not about winning pretty. It's just about winning. You know, I shared yesterday, one of my big takeaways was a lot of bad quarterback play. And did you watch those games last night? None of the four quarterbacks played that great. I mean, I guess Carr had the best game, but even he was about 230 yards. They only scored with 16 points. But that's the deal. This time of year, it can be ugly football. You're playing outdoors, cold environments, the grass, right? The track you're playing on isn't that great. It's been a long season. You're missing pieces. You're beat down. You just have to win the games. And that's why defensive run game can still be important this time of year. Become more physical games. You can't be throwing it 300 or 350 yards. The Vikings last night had, what, 65 total passing yards, still won the game on the road. This time of year, it's not always pretty, but it's just about winning. Maybe ugly football, but I'll take that any night of the week. And we'll see what we get tonight with those two games. Philadelphia and Washington will probably be similar. Seattle and the Rams could be a little more offensive. But this time of year, December football, it can be ugly football. You just have to make sure you win the games. Which takes me to this. As we head into the final 3 weeks of the season, who can we trust in the NFL? You know, people will say, oh, the NFL, it's a down year this year. Teams are not very good. I would say that maybe we don't have a great team. We don't have a 16-0 Patriots. Maybe we don't have some sort of 14-2 Chiefs. But I think we have a lot of good teams. I mean, the Patriots, Titans, four games over 500. The Chiefs, six games over 500. In the NFC, you have four teams that are six games over 500. If the Rams win tonight, there'll be a fifth team that's at least six games over 500. In the NFC, you have only three teams with losing records. In the NFC, you have eight teams that are 500 and better. As of now, you'll be missing a 500 team. And whoever wins the Washington-Philadelphia game will be another one. So you'd be leaving at least two 500 teams out of the playoffs as of now. In the NFC, you'd be leaving a bunch out. So maybe there's no great team better than the rest, but I don't look around and say, like, wow, it's just a lot of bad football. And I think it's a lot of good football, and all these teams are pretty even. There's still some good records out there. There's a handful of teams, five of them so far, with double-digit victories already. Plenty of teams that are at least 500, if not better. Now, maybe they're all just beating up on one another. But there's not a ton of bad. The Jets, the Jaguars, the Lions, they're pretty bad. Even the Lions are competitive. The Giants have now become a bad team. The Bears are pretty bad. There's also a lot of good teams that are grouped together fighting for those final wildcard spots. Who can you trust this time of year? As we get ready for the NFL playoffs, who would I put in the circle of trust? We all remember the classic from the Meet the Parents movie about 20 years ago when De Niro's character talks about the circle of trust. Who should be in the NFL circle of trust?
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the Burns family circle of trust. See, if I can't trust you, Greg, then I have no choice but to put you right back outside the circle. And once you're out, you're out. There's no coming back.
Well, I would definitely like to stay inside the circle.
Yes, so too with these NFL teams. They would love to be inside the circle of trust and then stay in there, because as this season has gone along, teams have moved up and down, and you think, oh, they look pretty good, right? The Buffalo Bills got off to a good start, and it turns out they're really kind of a 500 team. And then the Panthers were even 3-0. And you thought, hey, maybe we could trust the Panthers this year. They could do something special. And now they've lost 9 of their last 11 games. Once you're out, you may not be fully out in the NFL, but it could be tough to get back in. By the way, before I give you my circle of trust for teams in the NFL, quick side note. Robert De Niro, we know, is a great actor, right? But I always love, he is so good with his hand gestures. And the way he makes the hand gesture for the circle of trust, he doesn't just do a normal circle on his hand. He does it with like three fingers, but they're his last three fingers on his hand. It's very odd. I just noticed it when I was watching the clip this morning. He makes this circle of trust, and it reminds me of Copland, which I love. And I've referenced that movie before. And De Niro, when he's in his office in Copland, and Sylvester Stallone storms in during his lunch, and De Niro is all upset because Stallone's 2 weeks late trying to do something about the crooked cops, and the little motion that De Niro makes to say, to signify that his hands are tied, oh, it's fantastic. This move that he makes while eating the sandwich, you got to go find it. It's great. De Niro is great with these weird hand motions he makes that are just perfect for the scenes. But in regards to the circle of trust for the NFL, I don't think there are many teams that can be included, because as balanced as the NFL may be this year and as bunched up as all these teams may be, that obviously makes it tougher to try to rise above, that you can lose to really any of these teams any week. So who would you trust to actually get the job done? In the AFC, I have, I think, only three teams, and I referenced these three yesterday, but it'd be the Chiefs, the Patriots, the Colts. Now, with that comes only a certain amount of trust for the Patriots. The Chiefs I trust because they're playing defense. They've won a Super Bowl before. And even though the offense has been struggling, as long as you have Patrick Mahomes and you have those weapons that we saw on Thursday Night Football, it's hard to count them out of any game. Even if they go up against, who do you want to say, the Packers? The Chiefs have the most wins in the league behind Green Bay. So it's not such an outlandish take to say you could trust Kansas City. And you match them up against anybody, even if they're overmatched or they fall behind, as long as they have Mahomes, even if the offense isn't clicking at its best this year, as we saw Thursday, still there's always that chance they could rally, come back, and win with the weapons they have. So, of course, you can trust the Kansas City Chiefs. I would also still say the New England Patriots, because if you give me, statistically, it's a top-five defense, and you give me their run game solid, and then most importantly, Bill Belichick, greatest coach of all time, I will trust him in a big spot. But as I said, there's only a certain amount of trust with the Patriots because I've been saying this for weeks, Mac Jones has a ceiling, he has a limit to himself as the quarterback of that team. You can't rely on a rookie heading into the playoffs. I keep reiterating the numbers. No rookie quarterback has made it to the Super Bowl. Only three have made it to a conference championship. So I trust the Patriots. I don't trust them to actually win the Super Bowl. So I put them in the circle of trust, but with that disclaimer, that they're not all the way in, maybe just 1 foot in compared to these other teams. And I'd also put the Indianapolis Colts in the circle of trust. It would take certainly some trust for Carson Wentz, who you have to believe or trust that he won't turn the football over. But the way the Colts are playing, and they have the ground game, the defense has been good, they have a good coach who's won a Super Bowl before. Carson Wentz was an MVP quarterback before getting injured that same year they won the Super Bowl. And things are clicking, and they're playing good football. The Colts are the one team that maybe they won't win the division. They'll be the one wildcard team I would not want to face. And just on the outside would be the Chargers. But I can't trust them because they're too inconsistent. Can't trust the Bills. Offensive line's not good enough. They have no run game. Can't trust the Ravens. Too many injuries. I don't know what the future is for Lamar when he's going to come back. Can't trust the Steelers. Roethlisberger's not the same quarterback he once was. Can't trust the Titans without Derrick Henry. Can't trust the Cincinnati Bengals. They just seem too young. They seem like they skipped a step. And I can't trust that they truly are one of the best teams in the AFC already. In the NFC for that circle of trust, of course the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, regardless of that loss Sunday against the Saints. Doesn't wipe out everything that they've accomplished the last 2 years. They're defending Super Bowl champs. And as long as you have Tom Brady, much like Bill Belichick, you have my trust. The Buccaneers are certainly in that circle of trust. So too are the Green Bay Packers. Now, the Packers had that embarrassing loss week one against the Saints. But since then, the Packers maybe are the most consistent team in the league since week one. I mean, they have won 11 of 13 games since then. They haven't had a bad loss. You could say that Saints game week one. But since then, it's not like they slipped up against the Lions or even the Patriots the other night had four turnovers. Right? The Packers haven't had a performance. Yeah, they barely beat a backup quarterback in Baltimore. But as long as you win, that's all that matters. The Packers have been one of the more consistent teams. They also have an MVP candidate in Aaron Rodgers. They, of course, are in the circle. I would say the Los Angeles Rams, who I've been a big fan of all year, they're starting to get it together a little bit. The Robert Woods injury, I think, really set them back. But with that amount of talent that they have, plus Sean McVay, I mean, he's led them to a Super Bowl before. He knows offense. You have all those weapons. Jalen Ramsey will come back at some point. The Rams, because of their talent, and if they win tonight, they'll be one of the teams with 10 wins this year. They're in the circle of trust. I would also say the San Francisco 49ers, assuming they're healthy, they would also be in my circle of trust. They're like the Colts. They're the one team of the wild cards that I would not want to face in the NFC. That even if I had a home game, you win your division, you get a home game, you're looking at, okay, who can be our potential opponents? The Niners are the one team I would want to avoid. I'd rather face, potentially, the Cardinals may end up being a wild card team. The Vikings or the Saints or the Washington football team, whoever gets that last spot, absolutely you'd love to face them, but not the Niners. This team has been to a Super Bowl. Shanahan is considered a good offensive mind. Jimmy Garoppolo, when healthy, just wins a bunch of games. You have Deebo Samuel, who's been the best playmaker with the ball in his hands in the league this year. George Kittle is an animal. They got all sorts of weapons. They can get after the quarterback. I do trust the 49ers with the way they've been playing. And lastly, I would also say the Dallas Cowboys, I would have one foot in because the defense is playing well enough this year. And the offense, while it hasn't been good for about 2 months, you know of the weapons offensively, and you also saw first half of the year what they're capable of accomplishing. And if they can get back to that point, then the Cowboys could be a dangerous team. But until that offense figures things out, I don't know if I could trust Dallas in a big game. And I also have a lot of concerns about Mike McCarthy. Every week you could talk about some head-scratching move McCarthy makes. And eventually, I believe that's going to cost them. Plus, as I've been saying all year, for the Cowboys, at least defensively, they need to win a certain type of way. And that's really playing with a lead. You know, and then Trayvon Diggs can get his 10 interceptions and Parsons can get after the quarterback and rack up his 13 sacks. And, you know, if you have a lead, that defense is much better than when they're playing behind or when it's a tied game late and the offense can be even, you know, balanced and they can run the football. That's where Dallas is vulnerable. So I trust them, but to a certain extent. I think things need to fall their way and the offense has to turn it around, but they have the potential and they have the weapons on offense to get things right. After all, they are the number 2 seed in the NFC. So they'll get a home game. They'll get to face the worst team of the playoff field. Then you get to avoid the number 1 seed, at least in the next round. So I do trust the Cowboys, just maybe not as much as those other teams. And that would be my circle of trust. Really just 3 teams fully in the AFC and a few more in the NFC. I think the NFC has a couple of more competitors that I can trust to go win that conference, where the AFC is a little more top-heavy. The Chiefs are probably the clear favorite because of their potential, but the Patriots, I will always trust with Bill Belichick when they're playing good football, and the Colts are playing good football right now. I think they're getting dangerous heading into the playoffs. And then in the NFC, I do trust the Packers, the Buccaneers, still the Rams, and the 49ers are like those Colts, getting hot at the right time. They have the resume before. They've won those big games. And the Cowboys are similar to the Chargers, where I kind of half trust you, but there's something you have to change to get my full trust. The Chargers are just too inconsistent. They make too many mistakes. The Cowboys need to clean up that offense. Mike McCarthy needs to maybe do a better job, if possible. And then you could gain my full trust, like the Burns family, like Robert De Niro and Meet the Parents. Once you're out, football's a little bit different. You can find your way back in. Just a little difficult. And once you're in, you certainly don't want to be left out. It's very important. Got to be in that circle of trust when it comes to the NFL and become one of those top teams that could try to win a Super Bowl. Those would be the teams I would say as we head into the final 3 weeks of the season. Coming up, South Carolina with a big last week, and I'll explain why coming up. Some crucial moves made by Beamer and company, and we'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Little Lord Jesus, asleep on the hay in the manger.
Coming up, why the past week was so crucial for the Gamecocks program moving forward. Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Just gave you my circle of trust in the NFL, the teams heading into the final 3 weeks that you can truly trust this time of year. And coming up later on, I'll let you know the division, not in the NFL, but in college football, that you certainly can trust moving forward. The one division that will control the sport moving forward. Now, early signing day was last week, and then you have until the weekend to, you know, sign certain kids and wrap some things up. And for the Gamecocks, this was the most crucial part. We talked about the Spencer Rattler addition last week for South Carolina, but then they also went out and added some pieces as well, recruiting-wise, such as 4-star quarterback Tanner Bailey, who committed to the Gamecocks out of Alabama after he decommitted from Oregon and chose South Carolina instead. And I've always said, football has become very simple these days. It comes down to the quarterback position. You watch these teams in the NFL, the ones with the good quarterback play are the ones that are going to win. And college football has become much of the same. Now this year, Georgia specifically, a little bit of an outlier. Michigan's in the playoff, a little bit of an outlier. But Cincinnati has a talented quarterback. Alabama has the best quarterback. It's why they're the number one team. And when you go back to recent seasons, if you look at the playoff field, the best teams in college football are the ones with the best quarterbacks. And if a team doesn't have a good enough quarterback, that's why they didn't have a good enough year. It's pretty much that simple. Not often do you have a team that has a really good quarterback that has a down year. Right? Matt Corral had a really good year. Ole Miss had one of their best seasons in a while. Kenny Pickett, really good year. Pittsburgh won the ACC for the first time. If you have a really good quarterback, you will be successful. If your quarterback's not good enough, it'll be a lot harder to be successful. In fact, the last five national champions were all led by a first-round draft pick at the quarterback position. That's what it takes nowadays. And for South Carolina specifically, when you want to look at them and say, like, oh, how come they haven't been more successful lately? There's probably a lot of answers to that question, but I think most importantly is they haven't had that elite quarterback. In fact, I referenced this last week when talking about Spencer Rattler, and when I looked up this stat and referenced it, and if you're a Gamecock fan, you probably know it all too well, but it never really dawned on me until I actually looked it up, the fact that they've only had two quarterbacks ever drafted, ever, not in the first round, any round, two quarterbacks drafted, and the last one was 1990 when Todd Ellis went, certainly not in the first round, but in the ninth round, back when that was a thing. I mean, that is crazy, to put only two quarterbacks in the draft. Right, that Connor Shaw was undrafted free agent. Stephen Garcia, I think, was in a camp. Right, didn't he get a shot in the NFL? But to have a quarterback good enough that they will draft him. I mean, nowadays it's with seven rounds plus the supplemental picks. You know, you're having 300 guys drafted. You can't develop. Some years you get 10 quarterbacks taken. In that draft class, not once in 30 years can you produce a quarterback worth drafting. I think that's been the biggest issue. 1976, it was a quarterback going in the 17th round. 1990, a quarterback going in the ninth round. That's all. Even Steve Spurrier, for the success he had, he too could not develop some sort of elite quarterback. That's what Spencer Rattler potentially could bring to the table. I'm not telling you he's going to be some sort of Heisman quarterback for South Carolina, but he has the pedigree. We thought he was going to be the Heisman this past year at Oklahoma. He was supposed to be the number one pick going into this upcoming draft. Things didn't work out, and now he has to have a bit of a renaissance here, resurrect his draft stock, turn around his career with South Carolina. Can he? We'll find out, but on paper, he has the potential to. To further illustrate the point for South Carolina, not only that NFL draft drought, but also just in terms of a all-conference quarterback. They haven't had one since 1995. That's the longest drought in the conference as well. So historically, who has done the worst job of developing quarterbacks in the SEC? It's been South Carolina. It's no wonder they struggle. You have to have good quarterback play, especially more so now than ever before, in order to go where you want to, in order to challenge or compete in your conference or towards the top of college football. And eventually, if you have dreams of being a playoff team, typically that's what it takes, having one of the top five quarterbacks in the country. And maybe Spencer Rattler, maybe that's too high of expectations, but in terms of the possibility, based off of recruiting rankings and the profile and the thought process and what scouts are saying, he at least has the best chance of any. Now, I'm not telling you South Carolina is going to be a playoff team in the next year or two, but if you want to actually compete for the SEC, if you want to actually take a step forward in the program, maybe he is the guy that can try to do it for you. It's been since 1995 that they've had an all-conference quarterback. It's been since 1990 South Carolina has had a quarterback drafted, the two longest droughts in the SEC. And more than that, they haven't had a top 40 offense in college football in the last 8 years. They haven't had a top 25 offense in college football in over 25 years. Which, again, go back to the SEC, these are the longer droughts of the conference. So historically, at least last 25, 30 years, the worst program in the SEC of developing offenses, South Carolina. Now, maybe one guy doesn't change that in Spencer Rattler. Right? Maybe he still needs some help on the offensive line and, you know, maybe some playmakers on the outside. But I referenced that Tanner Bailey commit earlier. Shane Beamer at least has done a great job flipping the quarterback room, where this past season or this current season that's still wrapping up the bowl game, you were looking at Jason Brown, Luke Doty, Zeb Nolan as your three quarterbacks. And now you have Spencer Rattler, Tanner Bailey, and then even Braden Davis, another big-time recruit in that quarterback room. Right, night to day. Quite the upgrade to go from what you were working on in that or at that position last year to now what you at least have at your availability, at least what you have at your fingertips around your roster this year. Now, here was a friend of the show, Brad Crawford, on a podcast for 24/7 Sports talking about the excitement for South Carolina in getting somebody like Spencer Rattler and what that could potentially mean.
man, National Signing Day has come and gone. Shane Beamer has completely flipped the Gamecocks quarterback room, which heading into 2022, it was looking pretty bleak. But, I mean, he signed 2 4-star quarterbacks, Tanner Bailey, Braden Davis, and then landed, you know, arguably one of the biggest quarterback transfers, not only on the open market, but obviously in program history, and Spencer Rattler, the former 5-star who signed with OU, started a season with the Sooners and then got benched in October. But, man, yeah, Spencer Rattler, really since Jadeveon Clowney, number one overall prospect, you know, several years ago for the Gamecocks, Spencer Rattler has to be the biggest signee since Jadeveon.
Yeah, so it's an exciting time to bring in somebody like Rattler and then also to have those other recruits as well and have that quarterback room that you're trying to develop. Now, look, Luke Doty, Ryan Helinski, they were also 4-star guys that to this point, and maybe they didn't get a fair enough shake or a long enough chance, but they didn't pan out either. But it's just that hope and potential and that idea of really having to stress that quarterback room. Because without quarterback, without good quarterback play or certainly elite quarterback play, you're never going to accomplish as much as you hope. And you need to develop that position and have somebody. Can you have someone in 30 years that an NFL team deems is worth spending a draft pick on? Can you have a quarterback that's good enough that one team will look at and say, like, yeah, we should take a flyer on this kid? I mean, I'm not even talking about a first-round draft pick. Maybe that's too much to ask. But can you put anybody in the NFL draft? It's the longest drought in the SEC. And when you look at the draft history at that position for the conference, it's no surprise to see, right? LSU and Alabama have produced the most. You know, the other programs, Florida, Georgia, the usual suspects are all towards the top of the list. Mississippi State actually had the longest drought, longer than South Carolina, until Dak Prescott came along 5 years ago. And they have now put 2 quarterbacks in the NFL during that time, while South Carolina has not. So South Carolina takes over that great honor of the longer drought. For Mississippi State, it had been since 1979. And then Dan Mullen developed Dak Prescott. That worked out pretty well. And then they had Tommy Stevens. And then now Mike Leach is an offensive mind, and we'll see what he can do. But South Carolina now possesses that longest drought of not having a quarterback drafted at all since 1990. And you look in recent years, more recent, instead of going back 30 years to 1990, Texas A&M, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Mississippi State have all had quarterbacks drafted the last 2 years. For Ole Miss, it was 4 years ago. Matt Corral will be another one. Even Vanderbilt. As bad as Vanderbilt is, at least they had Jay Cutler 15 years ago. It was a first-round pick. Even they developed a quarterback. Now, you can always text the show, 843-608-1734, and on the text line, Texter says all draft picks are unproven commodities that are drafted on potential and hope, which is true. But the idea is that you want to have somebody good enough in your program or developed enough or at least have that potential and hope that some NFL team deems it's worthy to spend a draft pick on your guy. And the fact that it's been over 30 years for South Carolina to have any quarterback drafted, and even the two, only two all time. Right, again, Mississippi State has 2 in the last 5 years alone after their long drought. Alabama has 2 last 2 years, right? All these other programs putting guys in the NFL. Ole Miss is about to have 2 in a 5-year window. All these other, even the second-tier programs in the conference, putting guys in the NFL. And the fact that you can't develop anybody that has that potential and hope that a team is willing to take a chance on them in any of the rounds of the NFL draft. I'm not even talking first round. Could it be a 7th round? Right? Even Jake Fromm went in the 5th round. Georgia has struggled at the quarterback position, but they put Fromm in the NFL draft, at least in the 5th round. The Bills thought, like, yeah, that could be worth it. Right? Even Kellen Mond was, what, the 3rd round? Dak Prescott was the 4th round? I'm not even talking first-round picks. Can you have anyone that is worthwhile that a team is willing to draft? Spencer Rattler should be that guy. I'm not telling you he'll turn into a first-round talent with South Carolina like maybe we thought a year ago. But he should be drafted at some point. If not, then this whole move will be a complete bust. And at minimum, you help snap that streak if you're South Carolina of going over 30 years without a quarterback drafted, longest drought in the SEC. But more importantly is what Beamer's trying to build in that quarterback room. And Muschamp always tried and brought in good quarterback talent as well. Just couldn't develop it. It just didn't work out. Bad fit, whatever it was. The quarterbacks were never good enough. But that's where the emphasis has to be. Because nowadays, you're not going to win, or you'll be hard-pressed to win without a good enough quarterback. Now, Georgia and Michigan have had great years, so that kind of goes against my whole theory. I would say they're more of outliers than the norm, but I'd also tell you they also have limitations. We saw Georgia against Alabama. What was the difference? The quarterback. Georgia, I think, has a better all-around team, or they have more things to be proud of on their roster or their team or just the way they're playing this year, especially on defense. Didn't matter. Alabama had the better quarterback. Didn't matter that Georgia had a historic defense. Alabama had the quarterback. And that's been the big difference between those two programs in recent years. Georgia has never found that elite quarterback. Alabama has, year after year after year, developed Heisman quarterbacks of late. Same for Michigan. Michigan, I think, has a ceiling. Now, look, they beat, you know, Ohio State, and they're a good quarterback. But there's also a reason why Michigan is more than a touchdown underdog to Georgia, and many believe wouldn't be able to get past Alabama either. Because there's a limit to that style of football. You can win a bunch of games. Michigan and Georgia have. Can you win a championship? Can you win the biggest game? I don't think so without that quarterback. You can play defense, run the football. That could go far, especially, I was saying, in the NFL this time of year. But, you know, somebody like Carson Wentz, you watched Kirk Cousins last night. Eventually, if you want to win the big game, you're going to have to make some plays. You have to have that quarterback that's good enough to do so. And if you don't have a good enough quarterback, you're not going to be good enough as a program. And that's why Spencer Rattler, that addition, is exciting. And just the work done in that quarterback room by Beamer is exciting. To go from the trio you had this past season to that trio on paper is quite the upgrade. Doesn't mean it's going to work out, but it's at least a start. You need to address that area every year. You need to try to bring in talent. You need to try to develop that position because it's most important. And then maybe, somewhere along the line, South Carolina can finally put a quarterback in the NFL draft. Maybe they could even have, we could be so bold to say that eventually they'll have an all-conference quarterback. Because South Carolina has the longest drought for both of those things in the SEC. No team has been worse than South Carolina at developing the quarterback position. And I think that's been the biggest issue. Spencer Rattler could help that. These recruits could help. If nothing else, it makes you at least optimistic that South Carolina can turn that around. And that's the most important part for this program. I said going into this past year, two things you need to answer. And I've repeated this many times. Number one, do you have the right coach? Number two, do you have the quarterback on the roster? And I think most Gamecock fans feel like, yeah, you know what, at least for the time being, we got the right coach. We're riding with this guy. Won 6 games in his first year, going to a bowl. Did a pretty good job in recruiting. And I think most Gamecock fans are pleased right now with the head coach. Number two, we knew as the season unfolded, yeah, the quarterback's not on this roster. And so props to Beamer and his staff for going out there and certainly addressing that need this offseason. Getting Spencer Rattler, a veteran, and then also bringing in some good recruits that you try to develop in the meantime. I think that's a job well done. Rattler's the most talented quarterback that they have brought in over 30 years. We'll see if it works out. Maybe even leads to a quarterback going in the draft for South Carolina. Wouldn't that be something? Coming up, speaking of college football, the one division that you certainly need to keep your eye on for the foreseeable future. Not even a conference, but a division in college football. And we'll get to that coming up. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, the one division, not even a conference, but division to keep an eye on for the foreseeable future in college football. Get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Getting ready for Christmas this week. Tomorrow will actually be our final show of the week. We will not be on the air Thursday or Friday. Tomorrow will be on the air for most of our three-hour window, but it'll lead into Gamecock basketball a little bit earlier. We'll take you till 2:30 tomorrow, and then that's it. Then we'll talk to you after the holiday weekend. We'll be back on Monday. Joe, who was that, if you still have that in front of you?
The Marcells.
The Marcells.
With Merry Twistmas.
Oh, a little Merry Twistmas. So there you go. Maybe you'll celebrate with the old twist this year for Christmas. We'll get to our Tuesday Top 10 later on. There's a good chance that'll be Christmas-themed as well. You know, but I was talking last segment about South Carolina trying to develop a good enough quarterback. It really was mind-blowing to me. And if you're a Gamecock fan, maybe you've lived with this, so it's not as shocking to you. And it never dawned on me. I could go back and name you a bunch of quarterbacks drafted out of the SEC, but I've never thought about, like, oh, yeah, that's right. South Carolina has not had one drafted in over 30 years, since 1990. And, you know, it's the SEC where things have changed. The SEC has put a quarterback in the draft, and I believe it's the first round of the draft, every year except one since 1996. Let me confirm that. No, just draft in general, not the first round. So they've had a quarterback drafted every year except one draft since 1996. And if you look around the SEC, you have Texas A&M, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Mississippi State. Almost half the conference has put a quarterback into the NFL draft the last 2 years. Then you have Missouri was 3 years ago, Auburn 3 years ago, Ole Miss and Tennessee both 4 years ago. So almost the entire conference in the last 4 years alone. I mean, that's one recruiting cycle, if you will. You bring in a kid, he's there for 4 years. You develop him into a quarterback, theoretically. I know kids don't stay all 4 years, and you're not always going to have a quarterback. Every quarterback you recruit is not going to be an NFL kid, but you get the idea. In the last 4 years, just about every team in the conference has put a kid, a quarterback specifically, in the NFL draft. And that's not the be-all, end-all, but it just helps to show that you have a good enough quarterback that is worth getting drafted. They may not work out in the NFL. They may get drafted in the sixth round, only go to camp, and not last. But the fact that you have somebody worth, it's what it signifies. That you have somebody that the NFL believes is good enough that they're going to spend the draft pick on. By the way, Kentucky, you have to go back to 2008. Even Vanderbilt, 2006, more recent than South Carolina. So that's the company the Gamecocks keep, which you have to go back to 1990 for Todd Ellis. But as I also said last segment, South Carolina, that's why it was crucial, important. The job done in the last week by Shane Beamer and company as they added another quarterback commitment over the weekend, a four-star, to that room. So now you have Spencer Rattler, and you have two four-stars coming in as freshmen. So you have the experience, the veteran, Spencer Rattler is going to come in right away, and then you have the excitement and the potential of these youngsters coming out of high school who you can allow to develop in the meantime. And that's huge. You need a quarterback nowadays to win. And maybe South Carolina could even develop their first NFL quarterback, drafted quarterback, in over 30 years. That would be huge. Now here's the offensive coordinator, Marcus Satterfield, talking to the media yesterday about the idea of the job done in that quarterback room and bringing in some of this quarterback talent. Here's what OC Satterfield had to say.
Very fortunate, very, very fortunate to get. I mean, once you get an elite quarterback, one elite quarterback, that's pretty cool. To get two, that's really cool. And then to get three, you know, that's unreal. That's unreal. And all three of them, you know. Spencer, obviously, just from the standpoint of, you know, being a little bit older guy, he's been through this before. But the other two just, you know, they didn't flinch. I'm not going to name names, but call one of them and say, hey, we're taking this quarterback. And he says, great, let's make the room as good as we can, you know, as good as it can be. I'm going to put my head down and work. I'm going to take care of myself. And just the competitive spirit he had whenever he said that. And then, you know, for Tanner, who we added on late, you know, late in the class, like, he's just so fired up. I mean, we recruited him really, really hard at the beginning, and he went to Oregon, had some ties with that coaching staff. And I think, you know, we're really excited, and he's really excited to get back. And he needs to be playing in the SEC. I mean, he's an SEC kid. His dad, his grandparents, and SEC guys. So we're really excited about where that room's going and how that's going to help change, you know, at least what we look like offensively.
Satterfield talking about the new quarterbacks added to the program. By the way, I saw this great quote from him as well. I always love people who are kind of self-aware and can even poke a little fun at themselves. Satterfield, we know the seat, at least amongst the eyes of Gamecock fans, got hot this year. And he said when talking about Spencer Rattler, his first conversation with Spencer Rattler, he said, I told him, everyone in the country thinks you stink. Everyone in the country thinks I stink. So let's go at this with the biggest possible chip on our shoulders. I love that. That's a good message. Right, Spencer Rattler was supposed to be the Heisman winner, number one pick. Didn't quite pan out at Oklahoma. Lost his job, had to transfer. Marcus Satterfield, really an up and down, and maybe that's being kind, first year as offensive coordinator for South Carolina. Many people not wanting him back for this year or the upcoming year for South Carolina. And so I love that. And he says to Rattler, hey, everyone hates me too. They're down on you. Let's go prove them wrong. And they can go do it together. One final thing on the whole quarterbacks thing in the SEC, because I forgot Arkansas. That was also 5 years ago. So six of 14 teams in the SEC have had a quarterback drafted the last 2 years. And 11 of 14 teams have had a quarterback drafted in the last 5 years. And all but South Carolina have had a quarterback drafted in the last 14 years. for the Gamecocks. It's been since 1990. And so I always compare it to recruiting rankings, that regardless of how good you're doing, you have to compare it to the rest of your conference. South Carolina could have a top 20 class, but it's still only the ninth best in their own conference. That's hard to keep up or to shorten that gap between you and some of your competitors in the SEC. And it's similar at the quarterback position. Right? All these other schools are developing NFL talent at the quarterback position, except for South Carolina. And more recently, not so much Kentucky or Vanderbilt, but even they, their drought is about only half as long as South Carolina. So it's hard to compete year in and year out when these other schools are putting guys in the NFL draft at that position every couple of years. And for you, it's been over three decades. It's hard to compete and keep up that way. Now, speaking of the SEC, I've been teasing this, the division to keep an eye on, and you probably could have guessed where I was going with this, that it'd be somewhere in the SEC, because the SEC, of course, is always the conference to keep an eye on in college football. That's the conference to beat. That's the class of the sport, and will continue to be the class. But if you zero in on a specific division, it's more so the West. We know the East, you have Georgia this year, and then the East this year was pretty wide open, and even next year, it's why I think South Carolina, their ceiling, I don't think bringing Spencer Rattler puts them on Georgia's level. But hey, that number two spot in the East Division or a number three spot, they're there for the taking. Because otherwise, who else do you trust in that division right now? Florida? Will they bounce back in year one of Napier? Missouri, will they take a step forward? They had a bit of a disappointing season. Tennessee, you would assume, will continue to get better. So maybe it's Tennessee. Kentucky, you would like to think, will continue to get better. Just had the best recruiting class of all time. However, there's always a ceiling to what Stoops can accomplish for Kentucky from a football perspective there. Vanderbilt, you don't worry about. So there's a chance for South Carolina to take over as the number two or three spot in the East Division. But it's more so about the West Division is where the focus goes for the West moving forward for a couple of reasons. Because of the resources that are being committed and the talent that is being brought in. It's going to be about this SEC West Division for the foreseeable future. As we wrapped up early signing period heading into the weekend and get ready for the final signing period in February, more work will be done between now and then. But currently, as we sit here now, Texas A&M has the number one recruiting class in the country, passing Alabama and Georgia. How about the fact that 15% of the top 100 recruits went to Texas A&M? To try to put that into perspective, how good of a job Texas A&M did. In fact, they became the first program in over a decade not named Georgia or Alabama to finish with the number one class in college football. That's how good of a class Texas A&M has put together or will continue to put together. But then from there, right behind them, Alabama, the number two best recruiting class. And if you simply just went off of average, Alabama would actually have the best recruiting class in the country. Texas A&M just brought in more kids, and that boosted them slightly above Alabama. But Alabama has the highest average of their recruits. So no matter which way you slice it, Texas A&M and or Alabama have the best recruiting classes, both residing in the SEC West. Then you move further down the list. Sure, not another team in the top 10, but you have Auburn at number 13 in the rankings, LSU at number 18, Arkansas at number 19, Mississippi State at 22, and then Ole Miss, which I think was one of the bigger disappointments this offseason, at number 25. Now, of course, we know LSU changed coaches. That hurts the recruiting rankings. Otherwise, they'd be top 10, if not top 5 like they normally are. Auburn, it's their first full offseason for their coach. They still finished 13th. So there's been some moving pieces there, and yet you still have 5 of the 7 teams in the division finishing in the top 20 recruiting-wise, all 7 in the top 25. The talent being brought into the SEC, we know this is nothing new. Every year it's very good. It's the best. But more so in the West Division than the East. And beyond that, it's also about the resources. Something that I've said before on the air, right? We know the cliche, to make money, you got to spend money. If you want to be good, you have to devote resources to the program. It's something that at times maybe holds even South Carolina back. But when you look at the West Division in the SEC, everyone is getting paid. All of the coaches are getting paid $5 million or more, except for Sam Pittman is the lowest guy on the totem pole, down around $3 million. But obviously you have Nick Saban, you have Brian Kelly, who's making almost as much as Nick Saban, as crazy as that sounds. You have Jimbo Fisher with that ridiculous contract. You have Brian Harsin, Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin all making good money. Lane Kiffin just got a new deal. And it's similar to the Pac-12. As I referenced yesterday in the show, when the Pac-12 went out and Pete Carroll and USC was dominating, and so different schools in the Pac-12 started to make some big-time hires, and you brought in a Harbaugh, and you brought in a Chip Kelly, and even a Steve Sarkisian, and you brought in some more talent into that conference, and it helped build up some of these other programs and make the conference a little bit deeper. When you look at the West Division, obviously Saban is a mainstay. But now you bring over Jimbo Fisher in the last couple of years, Lane Kiffin, Mike Leach, Sam Pittman seems to be a real surprise. I did not like that hire, and yet he's done a really good job in 2 years. Now Brian Kelly enters the fold, and you can make fun of his fake, you know, foghorn, leghorn accent, but the dude can win football games, and I think he'll win plenty in the SEC. Brian Harsin didn't have a great finish to Auburn, but he did start 6-2, and you know, there's some high hopes or expectations for him at Auburn. He's won plenty of games before. Every school, right? Like, you know, the East Division, you always have that weak link of Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt will always hold you back. And they always say, what, you're only as strong as your weakest link, something along those lines. Yeah, well, Vanderbilt is really weak. But in the West Division, who is that weak link? I mean, this past year was LSU that finished in last. Wow, they just went out and got Brian Kelly. I think that's a big upgrade over Ed Orgeron. I think LSU will be just fine. What is the weak link in that West Division? That West Division will control college football moving forward. They're bringing in the most talent. They're spending the most resources. They're developing good coaches to try to keep up with Nick Saban. And that's the idea. It's the Saban effect. I've said the same thing about Belichick in the NFL. Belichick makes you want to have to work harder. Also probably makes you a little impatient because you want to find the next Bill Belichick. And when your coach isn't good enough, you move on from him much quicker because you think, nope, this is not going to work. And we've seen a lot of turnover in the West trying to keep up with Nick Saban. But right now, that division seems to be in a pretty good spot. Right, with Lane Kiffin and Jimbo and now Brian Kelly, I don't think those three are going anywhere as long as they want to remain there. And then Sam Pittman has been one of the better coaches. He's done one of the better jobs the last 2 years. We'll see about Brian Harsin. Mike Leach, there's plenty of reasons to be excited about him. Good coaches in that division, plenty of talent coming into that division. And anytime you're being led by Alabama and Texas A&M and Jimbo and Saban and now Brian Kelly, that West Division is certainly the division, the premier division, not even conference, division in college football and the one to keep your eye on moving forward. Coming up, I'll let you know where I've been right and wrong lately. We haven't done it in a while. Hour 2 coming up next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.